The following is a special presentation of Alpha Media. Welcome to Beyond the Headlines. In-depth interviews on topics of concern here in Portland and the Northwest. Now, here's your host, Brett Recap.
Thank you very much, and welcome in, everyone, to the 513th edition of Beyond the Headlines. We have a behind-the-scenes look at some of the stories making news here in the Pacific Northwest and beyond as we move through this month of April 2024 on all seven of our Alpha Media Portland radio stations, including FM News 101. We're going to dig deep a little bit into our emotions today to kick things off. Question for you, how are you when it comes to empathy? Do you have a true care or love for others, and do you know other people who share these qualities? New York Times bestselling author and psychiatrist Dr. Judith Orloff is an expert in this department. Her newest book is The Genius of Empathy, Practical Skills to Heal Your Sensitive Self, Your Relationships, and the World. By the way, the foreword of this new book is written by the Dalai Lama. So if you struggle sometimes with empathy, or perhaps worse, deal with others in your life who might not only lack this quality, but skew towards narcissistic, well, you're going to want to listen to my conversation with Dr. Judith Orloff. And you can also make plans to meet with her in person here in Portland. Judith is coming to the New Renaissance Books in Northwest Portland on Thursday, May 2nd. You can learn more about that event at newrenbooks.com. I start my conversation with Dr. Judith Orloff by asking her about the title of her book and some of the reasons she wanted to write it and speak to people.
You're almost like turning it on its head, using empathy as a skill, if you will. Is that the root of what you're talking about?
That's totally accurate. The Genius of Empathy is all about practical skills to develop empathy in your life, to improve your relationships, to find more empathy for yourself, and to get along with other people in the world and loved ones so much better.
And no matter where you go, there's always difficulty. Is that the case in terms of personalities and so forth?
Yes, I think there are difficult personalities at work, in your family, just going out in the world. They're all around. And so it's important to learn how to deal with it.
Everyone, I suppose, is perhaps born with, I don't know, maybe you could correct me since you're the expert, if you're just inherently one that has plenty of empathy for others, and maybe you're not. Can you develop that as you go on?
Oh, you can definitely develop empathy. I mean, I'm a psychiatrist, and I also work a lot with empathy in my practice. And so I combine my traditional medical skills with intuition and empathy to listen to my patients. And some people are born with more empathy than others. When I was in medical school and delivering babies, you know, some babies would come out just so empathic and open, and others were more linear and ready to conquer the world, you know, going to CEO types, you know, coming out. So it's a different kind of parallel, but it's really interesting because everybody has empathy, everybody, except for those at the bottom of the spectrum, the narcissists, the sociopaths, the psychopaths. I have a chapter in the book that's dedicated to identifying them, and they have what's called empathy deficient disorder. So they don't have empathy as we know it, the full-blown narcissists.
Okay. And about how much of the population do you think has that? Is it fairly extreme?
Well, I think it's coming out more and more in our everyday life, but I think it's a small, much smaller percentage. I think it's like 10%, something like that, which, you know, is pretty big, because you don't want to be in a relationship with narcissists if you can help it. If you have a narcissistic boss, it's very hard to be happy at work, because you have to change your expectations of what they're going to do and how they're going to treat you.
You got that right. And that's something that we can certainly all relate to. And let's talk about that workplace. How do you recognize that someone, that you react to someone that way? And then what kind of tools can you provide?
Yes, it's important to look at the signs to identify a narcissist. And oftentimes they're self-obsessed and it's me, me, me. And it's always about them, and you have to do things their way. And they often use something called gaslighting, which means that they kind of make you go crazy by not believing your reality. If you say the sky is blue and they say, what's wrong with you? The sky is pink. Don't you know that? And if they do that to you day after day at work, it can be pretty upsetting, and it crushes self-esteem.
It feels like we're seeing that a lot in the news these days, doesn't it?
Oh, yes, it's rampant. It's all over. It's a lesson for all of us. So we can identify these people and certainly not get in an intimate relationship with them or expect a deep friendship with them because they don't have empathy. And that's why I wanted to present this as a whole chapter so people can say, all right, this person is extremely seductive. And narcissists and sociopaths, psychopaths, very seductive. But and they reel you in and they do what's called love bombing, where they love you and just put out so much love and say everything you ever wanted to hear until they reel you in. And once they do, they become cold, withholding, and punishing.
How do you recognize it and how do you deal with it?
You recognize it if somebody is overly charismatic, overly seductive, love bombing you. As regular people don't do that. And they can appreciate you and have a good time, but not love bomb you. And then also, if they don't believe what you say and they don't value what you say and they put you down, because narcissists need to have power. That's how they operate. Whereas empathy and empathic people want to have connection and love. So they're two different motivations. And it's very hard for very empathic people to understand the dynamics of a narcissist. But in order for the empathic person to have healthy relationships, they have to. They have empathy deficient disorder, and go right to that chapter if that's what's up for you and you really want to identify these people so you can avoid them when possible, or else know how to deal with them. Like if they're in your family and you can't be without them, you know, they're going to be in your life, and how to deal with them in a more peaceful way.
Are you able to come to some kind of happy medium in that case, whether it be a family member or in the workplace, where you are able to function and be happy and keep that individual at arm's length, if you will?
Yes, it's possible in a lot of cases, but you have to identify the person. You have to use what's called the gray rock method. When they try and upset you or try and push your buttons, you are like a gray rock. You do not give any kind of emotional input. You don't get upset. They like you to get upset. You stay very calm and say, let's talk about how to solve this problem, very solution oriented, rather than letting them push your buttons. Because it's called feeding their supply when you respond to them. And you don't want to do that. You don't want to give them their supply. You want to be a gray rock, and you're not giving them anything then.
New York Times bestselling author and psychiatrist Dr. Judith Orloff is with us. Her newest book is The Genius of Empathy. We talked about the news just a little bit here, Judith. So, you know, politics is very divisive. How can you navigate that?
Yes, I was speaking at a book festival this past weekend, and somebody who works in Washington asked me, you know, I'm around people all the time. I don't respect their beliefs. And, you know, I have such a hard time with that. How should I deal with them? And my answer is, you don't deal with them. You don't change them. You change yourself, how you respond to them. And by doing that, you change the whole dynamic. Because if you argue, if you stay angry, if you are combative, then you're just perpetuating the cycle. But if you're able to, you know, just say, for instance, if they're spouting off a belief you don't believe in, and you could just say, you know, I hear that, and I'm going to take it under consideration. Thank you. And that's all you say to them. You don't get into it with them. And by having that neutrality, you're communicating to them, I hear you. And that's one of the things people need to know. Most people, in terms of empathy, they want to be seen, they want to be heard, they want to be valued. And even if you don't agree with this person or like them at all, you can give them that. And if there's any hope of finding some kind of middle ground, that will open a door for you.
Very good. Let's talk about the power of social media, especially young people, really. It can absolutely drive wedges through relationships, just simple posts. And you don't have to be young, you know, to experience that. It's just times have really changed. It cuts like a knife. Sometimes it's used for good. But can you just talk about how your experience is with social media these days in 2024?
Well, I think it's anti-empathy. It's the exact opposite of empathy. And it fuels narcissism and inauthenticity that is very damaging to people. And it's important not to feed into them. And when you don't feed into it, you're not creating more of the same environment. but it can destroy young girls, for instance, in terms of body image and what they think about themselves. And it portrays an inaccurate view of life. Everybody's always glamorous and going to parties, and that isn't how life is. And that isn't how, you know, I wouldn't want a life like that.
No. Yeah. Do you recommend you just stay away from it? How do you use it in a healthy way?
Balance. Like anything else, if one becomes addicted to social media and starts putting yourself down, that's not healthy. But what you can do is practice self-empathy. If you notice that you're comparing your body to somebody else, or you're comparing your social life to somebody else, and you're feeling less than, that's where people get into trouble. But you can use it if you want to go on social media a little bit, you know, just use it, you know, practice being nice to yourself about it, as opposed to tearing yourself up and beating yourself up, which is what people do. And so you can practice self-empathy, or even better, you can show empathy for other people and start to model that instead of this other stuff that's going on, which is so destructive. What all that is about, basically, is that people want to be seen and heard and appreciated. You know, all the hoopla that's going on the social media. And if you could give it to them in another way, it would create a new kind of pattern. And that's what I'm trying to do with this book, is to show how empathy can change things. Because what people basically want, as a psychiatrist, you know, I've seen this over the years, they want to be seen, they want to be heard, they want to be valued. That's underneath everything.
Yeah, and you're getting back to that a couple times. So you're coming to Portland, which is exciting. Tell us about that trip.
Yes, I'm very excited. I'm coming to do a book signing and talk about empathy and the genius of empathy at New Renaissance Books. And I invite everyone to come and join the dialogue and the conversation. It's on May 2nd. Everyone is invited to join this conversation and find a new way of relating to one another. And New Renaissance Books is such a fun place to go. It's like from another era. It's beautiful, big Victorian, lots of books if you're a book lover. And I look forward to seeing you there May 2nd, New Renaissance Books.
Excellent. Before we let you go, please tell us about your relationship with the Dalai Lama and how you got it forward.
Oh, I'm very honored that His Holiness the Dalai Lama wrote the foreword to this book, as he feels so strongly about empathy and compassion. And I actually don't have a personal relationship with him. I simply submitted my book to his office, and you know, they decided he wanted to write a foreword to it. So it's one of those magical situations where, you know, I feel blessed. And it's a beautiful foreword. It's a one-page foreword, and it just tells about how important empathy and compassion are in this world of so many people, is that this is the path that we must take if we want to survive and be happy.
Dr. Judith Orloff, really inspiring, definitely uplifted by your words. Is there anything you haven't discussed that you want to make sure and say?
Just that this book is for people who want to develop more empathy, but are afraid they're going to be burning out if they do this, and they don't know how to set boundaries. So I'll teach you how to set boundaries and enjoy your empathy and have a life where you can respect each other and love each other, you know, more perhaps than you've been doing, even, and including yourself. So practice self-empathy every day. And I look forward to meeting people at New Renaissance, talking more about it.
Dr. Judith, thank you for your time.
You're very welcome.
And there is Dr. Judith Orloff, a psychiatrist and New York Times bestselling author. Most recently, The Genius of Empathy, Practical Skills to Heal Your Sensitive Self, Your Relationships, and the World. She is going to appear right here in Portland on Thursday, May 2nd at New Renaissance Books in Northwest. I know she'd love to meet you. We're going to stay on this positive train and talk burritos and feeding hungry people in our community. Check out how our KXL Everyday Hero segment sounded on Wednesday morning.
The Burrito Brigade started in Eugene years ago, then branched out to Portland and just recently Chicago. Ash Brantington heads it up.
When you look around in Portland and in, honestly, a lot of this country, and we can see that there's a lot of need from other members of our community. There are people who are hungry, there are people who need homes and food, and people who need more dignity and human connection. One way that is pretty easy for like anyone to take part in is to make some food and hand out food. That's, you know, we're all feeding ourselves all the time. Everyone's pretty capable of putting something together and then just going and sharing that with the community.
Tahari Fields brings young ladies from the Junior Youth Empowerment Program with the Baha'i community.
We have five girls that get together once a week. They study meaningful material, and then they engage in society building process, part of which is service. And so we've chosen Burrito Brigade to be our monthly service opportunity. And so we get together once a month and come here and make burritos.
Josh is also there every week. He's been coming since 2016.
How many burritos would you say you've helped build over the years?
Oh, wow. In the thousands, probably. Mm-hmm.
So tell me a little bit about why you help out.
It's been really great to actually get out and hand people the burritos. And, you know, it's because they're all very thankful. And it's, it's great to see these folks who are outside. You know, they're people, too, and they need food. And it's nice to, you know, help out however you can.
Ash says volunteers are key to this, and they could always use more, plus donations.
We have a pretty casual drop-in style volunteer model, mm-hmm. and so you can stop in. We meet the second Sunday of every month. We start chopping it around 10:30 and then wrap up the day, usually between like 2 and 3, kind of depending on how things go. People can drop in and take part in whichever thing they want to do, or come with a group. If you're going to bring a ton of people, let us know. But we like to make it as easy and kind of low barrier for people to get involved as possible.
And what do you guys need? I'm assuming the regular donations, volunteers, you know, supplies?
Definitely. Yeah, we always need regular volunteers. We especially love people who can come and help us distribute burritos at the end of the day. And so we'll tell you where to go, or if you have a place in mind, we would love you to come and tell us where you want to go. Supplies, we'll take donations of pretty much anything. We use a lot of foil, 10-inch tortillas. Those are two that are, if we just buy them outright, are quite costly. We use a lot of spices for our spice blend, and so we need a lot of like cumin, minced onion, minced garlic, pepper, and then vegetables.
Veronica Carter, FM News 101.
Thanks a lot for that, Veronica, and big shout out to Burrito Brigade. If you'd like to learn more, just go to KXL.com. You're listening to the 513th edition of Beyond the Headlines. I'm your host, Brett Rekamp. More health news now. Some of your favorite cereals and classic candies could actually be banned in several states because of cancer-causing chemicals in their ingredients. KXL's Tim Lance talked about this with healthy living expert and best-selling author Jana Johnson this week on Portland's Afternoon News.
Thanks for having me.
A ban's already been approved by the California legislature. It targets potentially carcinogenic food additives, chemicals like brominated vegetable oil, potassium bromate, propylparaben, I guess is how you pronounce it, and also red dye number 3. I'm guessing you're not a fan of any of these.
I am not. In fact, we have a hard time pronouncing it, our bodies have a hard time digesting it. And these chemicals have actually been banned in Europe for a really long time. And, you know, the FDA knows that these are bad for us. And so it's a sensitive subject for me as a mom of 3 kids.
You know, I can remember, too, when I was younger, red dye number 2. It almost became a meme, if you will. We didn't have memes back then, but if we had, it would have been a meme. Everybody talked about how obviously red dye number 2 was bad for you and had to go.
Yep.
And apparently we haven't learned anything.
You know, that's absolutely true. In fact, there's even more chemicals now and more numbers in the dyes. And, you know, we have so much genetically modified food, and then we add these harmful chemicals on top of it. And the reason that we do is because the scientists know when they study these foods that they actually make them more addicting. And that is why we have such a rise in obesity, cardiovascular issues, diabetes, especially amongst kids, and disorders like ADD.
Yeah. I mean, these are pretty common foods, too. For those who haven't seen any information on this before, we're talking, at least in the California ban, cereals like Lucky Charms and Fruit Loops, candies including Skittles, and I know a lot of people are addicted to those, Nerds, M&M's, Swedish Fish, and snacks like Flamin' Hot Cheetos and Doritos, even Gatorade, sports drinks that are advertised as being, you know, good for you, beneficial, healthy, they're on the list.
They are. And, you know, to make it even more jaw-dropping, there's even breads that are on this list. It's a lot of food that our kids eat. And as I said, I have 3 kids, and my 2 oldest are teenagers now. And you lose a little less control over what they eat. But You want to know something really maddening? The school system serves some of the most awful food that these kids are able to buy. And you have no control of it whatsoever. The schools sell every bit of all of these foods that are listed.
You are listening to Portland's Afternoon News, and we're taking a deeper dive into the push to ban certain foods because of alleged cancer-causing concerns, or alleged cancer-causing ingredients, I should say, and concerns about those. Our guest is healthy living expert Jana Johnson. And Jana, I've got to believe that some of these foods are as popular as they are because they're so cheap, too.
Absolutely. That's 100% true. You know, it's really frustrating because it costs more to eat healthy. And I understand that it's tough on families, you know, to feed all the mouths. But think about this. It's going to cost you a whole lot more when you have health problems. And as a person who's overcome Lyme disease and autoimmune disease, I can tell you it's much better in the long run to spend more money on better quality food than to have to pay to overcome a sickness.
You know, we've covered a lot of stories recently here about the number of cancer cases involving younger people more than ever before, which is disturbing enough as it is. But do you really think that this seems like it's going to be an uphill battle? Do you think, given the popularity of these foods, that you could at some point in time sell people on the idea of giving up on these, their favorite snacks?
I think that we can. I mean, the fact that this is this ban is actually being brought to life here in the States is pretty big deal. I've known for quite a long time that these chemicals were banned in Europe. And so I think that it might happen. I think more and more attention is going to be brought to it. And honestly, we need that because we are feeding our children some of the most unhealthiest foods, and they're getting addicted to it, and then they're suffering for it, and their children are our future.
Hey, and quickly before I let you go, when I say eating clean, what does that mean to you?
Eating clean to me means staying away from processed foods, staying away from the dyes, artificial sweeteners, wheat and gluten, and honestly watching that sugar intake. You need to look at everything. And if it has more than, honestly, 8 grams of sugar, you need to pay attention to your serving size because it accumulates throughout the day.
And I'm one who always thinks that the fewer ingredients that are listed, the better off you probably are with a packaged food.
100%. You are completely right. And if you cannot pronounce it, your body will not recognize it.
All right. She is healthy living expert Jana Johnson. If you missed any of this interview, no problem. Listen to it online at KXL.com. The podcast link is at the top of the homepage. You click there and you go down to Portland's Afternoon News. Jana, it's always good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us again today.
Thank you, Tim.
Good stuff, Tim. Thank you. And again, we appreciate that health information from best-selling author and healthy living expert, Jana Johnson. We leave you this week with thoughts from Timberline Lodge. It actually caught fire Thursday night. The historic building, constructed by local craftsmen in 1937, was closed on Friday while ATF and Forest Service investigators worked to find out what caused the fire. Clackamas Fire says firefighters were able to keep the fire contained to part of the roof and attic. No one suffered injuries. So I'll bring you the story first with how things sounded Friday morning on a news story with our morning reporter Annette, followed by a live interview on the historical aspect of Timberline Lodge with the executive director of the Oregon Historical Society, Carrie Timchuk.
Investigators trying to find out what caused a fire to break out at one of Oregon's most cherished landmarks. KXL's Annette Newell tells us three alarm fire at the Timberline Lodge sent employees racing to stop it.
Porter's an employee at the lodge. He was there when the flame sparked.
I was in the kitchen and I saw a lot of my coworkers rushing for the fire extinguishers and having guests exit the building.
Two workers went to the attic and tried to put the fire out with extinguishers, but they couldn't stop it. Fire crews from Hoodland, Clackamas, Gresham, and Estacada Fire all worked to put out the flames. Timberline's marketing director, John Burton, tells our news partner, KGW, he thinks that embers from the main chimney caused the fire. As for the guests,
everyone made it safely out. They are in the day lodge, sheltering safely. No injuries.
Timberline, which was declared a national landmark back in 1977, will be closed today as investigators from the ATF and U.S. Forest Service work to determine what caused the fire. Annette Newell, FM News 101.
And joining us now is the executive director of the Oregon Historical Society, Carrie Timchuk, to talk about the historic building. Carrie, good morning.
Good morning to you.
So it looks like the lodge, Timberline Lodge, escaped some catastrophic damage in the fire, which is excellent. How about some of the history of this beautiful structure?
Oh, yes. And really thankful that it did escape what looks like major damage. It is one of the most historic and iconic and, you know, beloved landmarks. It is a national landmark, as was said, here in Oregon. And it was part of the reason is it was how it was built. It was built by hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of WPA workers, the Works Progress Administration, and CCC members, Civilian Conservation Corps, both set up by President Franklin Roosevelt in the midst of the Depression to provide jobs and salaries and a sense of worth to, you know, the massive amounts of men and women who were unemployed during the Depression.
And the event when it opened was pretty presidential, wasn't it?
September 28th, 1937, President Roosevelt and Eleanor, the First Lady, were here in Oregon to dedicate both the Bonneville Dam and the Timberline Lodge. So what a day that was in Oregon.
Yeah, Timberline, it's a family-friendly location all season long, or all seasons, really, all year long. But what about the 1950s, Carrie?
The 50s when it was skiing or?
I don't know. We were understanding that it was not as family-friendly during that decade. In other words, the oldest occupation, if you will.
Oldest profession.
Oh, well, I don't know about that. But it was, for years and decades, of course, it's been a haven for tourists and for Oregon families, for skiing, and, you know, made famous, you know, probably around the country and around the world, maybe by The Shining, the movie The Shining in 1980, when the Jack Nicholson horror movie made it famous.
Yeah, that's not exactly family friendly either, at least for little kids. Yeah. So has the lodge ever dealt with fire or any other dangerous situations before that you know of?
Not that I know of, and certainly nothing like that got the attention that this did on the news last night. I know a lot of families across Oregon are so relieved that it wasn't more heavily damaged.
You study Oregon history a lot, and this is a historical building, Timberline Lodge. It's burned. Hopefully it'll be okay. Is it treated differently? And maybe you could explain how historic buildings are treated differently in Oregon.
Well, as a national landmark, a historic landmark, there are a series of, you know, rules and regulations that go with how they are treated, you know, how you care for them, what can be done, you know, to them and on them. So I know they'll be looking at those as they go forward. But when Roosevelt dedicated it, he said it was a monument to the skill and faithful performance of workers on the rolls of the WPA. And these were just average, everyday, you know, these were not construction experts or they were men and women who were out of jobs and then had to be trained to be builders and plumbers and masons and artists. All the art in Timberline was part of the WPA, where they hired artists to do the art, quilters and sewers, and just amazing the number of people that were involved in building Timberline. And in not just the outside, but the interior as well.
And, you know, history buffs and just Oregon lovers, all of us, we hate to see any kind of building with history go away.
And it was, you know, it was done for about $1 million, which is back in 1938, I guess would translate to, a little bit more than that today.
Just a little. Yes. Thank you very much for joining us.
You bet.
All right, that is Carrie Timchuk, the Executive Director of the Oregon Historical Society.
Thanks again to Timberline employees Michael and Porter, our news partner KGW, also to KXL reporter Annette Newell, and Carrie Timchuk with the Oregon Historical Society about the significance of Timberline Lodge and its place in Oregon history. You have been listening to Beyond the Headlines, a behind-the-scenes look at some of this week's stories. You can follow me on Twitter, X. If you missed anything, the podcast is up now at KXL.com. You can find it anywhere you get your podcasts. Just search for KXL Beyond the Headlines. We now have 513 shows to choose from. For Alpha Media USA in downtown Portland, I'm Brett Recamp on FM News 101.
This has been Beyond the Headlines. In-depth interviews on topics of concern here in Portland and the Northwest. This has been a special presentation of Alpha Media.